104.5 The Zone. Again, I don't know, about 30 minutes ago, we told you there were going to be a lot of Tennessee names popping up in that transfer portal and to get ready. And if you're a Tennessee fan, there's going to be some gut punches. And it's happened, and it will continue to happen. So here is the current list today. Jameer Johnson, offensive lineman, has started 17 games for Tennessee, including 5 at left tackle last season. Henry To'o, clear leader on that defense. Quaverius Crouch, also on that defense. And running back Eric Gray into the transfer portal. Doesn't mean they'll transfer necessarily, but if you're in that situation, it makes sense to want to explore your options, see what happens at Tennessee. Maybe you find a better situation. Maybe you come back. Don't know, but terrible day for Tennessee football. And it's going to get worse before it gets better. Todd Furman, our guy in Vegas, lives his life by that phrase, joins us now at Todd Furman on Twitter. What's up, man?
You know, I lived my life in the transfer portal for a long time, always looking to try and entertain the best offer that was on the table. I've since settled down and like to think of myself now as a franchise quarterback more than anything else.
I started to ask you about your girlfriend, but the last time I did that, you had broken up with said girlfriend a couple of years ago.
Yeah, but that was like 4 or 5 years ago, Brent. I'm a different man now. This is a long-standing relationship.
But literally,
so much so, I feel comfortable with you bringing on the real talent in this relationship to talk about gaming numbers in the state of Tennessee. If that wasn't the case, there's no way I was going to offer that kind of baton and say, hey, Brent, Dawn, you should really talk to Nicole and get her expertise. And she knows Tennessee gaming better than anybody.
Well, I mean, honestly, you know, she's pretty good. So if something happens between you guys, I'm just going to have to keep you both on, right?
Well, I mean, I understand. Business ultimately comes first, and no harm, no foul. I respect the hustle.
Hey, we've got a lot going on this weekend with the NFL. We've also got some octagon activity. Here's the thing with that stuff. Like, I'll turn on the television and I can't tell because I don't follow the sport, but I love watching it now. That happened during quarantine. But I can't ever tell if something's live or taped. Like, so Conor McGregor was fighting last night on my television and I hadn't seen the fight. I didn't know what was going to happen. I had no idea if it was live or not.
Yeah, Conor won't get into the octagon until this weekend. That's when the fight will be live. But there was a full slate of USC activity that started as early as about 7:15 in the morning Pacific. Much like you, I mean, I kind of watch it more as a casual spectator for some of the bigger bouts that are out there. Won't claim to handicap it. We'll bet it occasionally when I get some information that's worth following through on. But I won't have a dollar invested in the Abu Dhabi fights this weekend on Fight Island.
Okay, so you pick your shots with regard to the UFC.
Yeah, for sure. It's one of those things that typically with UFC, I just have never been able to identify an edge. And rather than flipping coins and doing so, I'll kind of channel my efforts elsewhere. Boxing oftentimes is much more profitable with some of the second tier fighters. Every now and again, you get a huge opportunity to take advantage. But while we're on that, you know, when we look at the numbers here, I mean, Conor McGregor, an overwhelming favorite against Dustin Poirier, you're talking about -310. The going rate at FanDuel. So for those folks new to UFC, $3.10 you have to risk to get $1 coming back. And there's no doubt that Conor will be tied into a variety of parlays across all sports, especially with the NFL games on Sunday.
Did you hear that, Davenport? Poirier.
Poirier. I said Poirier. I was close. I don't have that kind of Cajun accent.
We have a fast food restaurant out here like that, El Pollo Loco, Don. So you were kind of close in that regard.
See, there you go. I'm close. Okay, so
Wait. Is that crazy chicken? Is that what that is?
I mean, theoretically, I think it just means cooked chicken. If you break it down, you don't go like, and you don't go the whole root word, because that's what I thought first when I drove by. I'm going, wait a second. You don't want to eat beef that's infected with mad cow disease. Why would I want to eat a crazy chicken? But they told me ultimately when I walked in there, that's not exactly what El Pollo Loco means.
Yeah, leave it to you to have the questions at the counter.
Hey, sometimes you have to try and ask those hard-hitting questions. I mean, I'm not nearly as an accomplished a journalist as the two of you guys are when it comes to interviewing people and everything else. So I feel much more comfortable going into a fast food establishment, asking a 16 or 17-year-old exactly why the restaurant is named what it is, and hoping that they have a suitable explanation that I can continue to share with other people when you go on radio out of market and they ask you, hey, does El Pollo Loco mean crazy chicken? And you can emphatically say, no, it does not.
Love it. See, this is the knowledge you get from Todd Furman here on 3HL. All right, you said you stay away from kind of the fights and all of that. What about the the odds of Deshaun Watson's next team if he's traded by the Texans.
gets it awfully interesting here because I think this relationship can still be repaired, but there's no doubt that Deshaun hasn't exactly seen eye to eye with Cal McNair and the rest of this Houston Texans brass. The crazy part about it, though, spinning the narrative about wasting careers, what, the Texans have been in the playoffs 6 out of the last 10 years. That's better than 90% of the franchises that are out there. But ultimately, when you make the kind of commitment they did to Deshaun and have $155 million on the books over the next couple of seasons, you want to make sure that everyone is pulling in the same direction. Ultimately, I think there are probably two teams that make the most sense because of the glut of draft picks that they could offer up. One, of course, being the Jets, if Houston had even mild interest in Sam Darnold and trying to resurrect his career. But I still think it comes down to the Miami Dolphins. You can get the number one pick that you traded for Laremy Tunsil back. You can get Tua, who'll go into a sophomore campaign. But until Houston settles on a head coach, how do you go about trading your franchise quarterback and bringing in another guy that we haven't seen the ability to scratch the surface? It's going to take a little while for Houston, especially on the defensive side, if they were to lose J.J. Watt. But those are the only two teams other than remaining in Houston, I think, are actually legitimate suitors for Watson services going forward.
Isn't it crazy that we're talking about Deshaun Watson being traded from here? What are they doing over there?
I mean, the reality of it is, who thought from where we were last offseason to this one that the Tennessee Titans would have the most stable quarterback situation of any team in the AFC South? Because you have questions aplenty now for Indianapolis, the direction they're going to go in. And you know it's going to be a learning curve, obviously, for Trevor Lawrence, who's the assumed number one pick down there with Urban Meyer in his NFL debut. As he puts together a coaching staff that's leaving me really scratching my head. When you talk about the likes potentially of Scott Linehan being your offensive coordinator and some guys from the college ranks that I'm not sure I would bring on to command a major Division I program, let alone coach an NFL franchise from irrelevance into being relevant again.
What about your Colts, Todd? What are your Colts going to do?
I have to give Chris Ballard the benefit of the doubt. I mean, he's done enough to build this roster up over the last couple of seasons that if Philip Rivers had anything left in the tank, that they talked about the possibilities of him coming back on another one-year deal. I think the Colts have a target in mind. Now, who that ultimately is, that remains to be seen, because I don't think they're going to go into camp next year re-signing Jacoby Brissett or giving Jacob Eason the chance to win the job in his sophomore campaign out of Washington. So when you look at some of the big names out there, maybe Reich puts together a package for Carson Wentz. Should the new head coach in Philadelphia want to side with Jalen Hurts? Do we see Matthew Stafford looking for a new spot? Is it a veteran in Ryan Fitzpatrick that behind an offensive line? I think there are a number of options out there, depending on who Frank Reich thinks can command that offense, because you have all the other pieces around him on the offensive line, Jonathan Taylor, Michael Pittman, et cetera, for the Colts to be pretty relevant if you get the right fit under center.
Todd Furman, our guy in Vegas, Bet the Board podcast. Check that out. Fox Bet Live on FS1 at 3:30 on every weekday. Afternoon. Big weekend of football. Obviously, we've reached the Final Four coming up this weekend, and it's an interesting couple of games involving some interesting quarterback matchups. You got the old guys and the young guys going at each other. But what do you think about that first game, Green Bay and Tampa Bay?
You know, this game has kind of left me scratching my head, and partly because I haven't power rated Green Bay nearly where they need to be all season. And I can admit when I'm wrong on how I decide to grade a team out before the campaign started. And Matt LaFleur has exceeded everyone's expectations in terms of getting the most out of Aaron Rodgers, whether it was on purpose to draft Jordan Love and light a fire under a veteran quarterback, or the way they've gone about trying to utilize multiple running backs lately and some of the secondary receiving options opposite Davante Adams. But the real story in Green Bay over the last couple of weeks has been a resurgent defense. And this team is built to rush the passer when you play with a lead. Jair Alexander, one of the best cover corners in the NFL. And while I worry a little bit about their ability to consistently stop the run, let's see if what Tampa did last week against the Saints with 25 combined carries between Ronald Jones and Leonard Fournette will be the game plan that they elect to employ here. I think you'll see a lot of two tight end sets, but this game should be one for the ages. If I had to pick a side or total here, I'm leaning under 51.5 just because Green Bay is so methodical offensively that if they take 6 to 7 minutes off the clock and have to settle for field goals, it's going to make it very tough to go over. Meanwhile, Tampa on the other side, you look at the box score, they didn't wow you with anything they did offensively against the Saints. They had 3 touchdown drives, none of which traveled more than 40 yards coming off of turnovers. And these two teams amongst the best in the league protecting the football. So I would lean under 51.5. But to be quite honest, I don't have an investment on this game, side total or prop, just yet.
Is this an option to live bet based on kind of what you see and what you feel as the game's going on?
Oh, I think it's always, especially this time of year where the pregame numbers are about as tight as you're going to find, that there's no real reason, unless you have strong convictions and you think a team can lead box to wire, to run to the window and bet it beforehand. I mean, FanDuel gives you plenty of options to bet live after an opening drive, after a quarter. So wait and be patient. I mean, you could have had a chance to grab the Bucks plus 4.5, plus 5 against the Saints rather than taking 2.5 before kickoff. And I think, especially as far as the total's concerned, if one of these teams gets down double digits, you're going to see the game really take off, as both of them are more than capable and comfortable to throw it around the yard. Whereas if you're talking about it staying within a 7 to 10 point range, you know, I can't see Green Bay abandoning the run any more than I could see Tampa suddenly deciding, hey, look, Leonard Fournette's gained more than 100 yards from scrimmage each of the first two playoff games. We're going to completely forget about that and let Tom Brady throw it around in, you know, 30 plus degree temperatures.
All right, let's talk about the young guys. Obviously, the news coming out, Patrick Mahomes did everything at practice for the Chiefs, and the Chiefs are favored over Buffalo by 3.
Yeah, and this is a game, you mentioned it, Don. I think all of us were under the assumption that, hey, Patrick Mahomes was going to get upgraded. The fact that he was tweeting in the wake of that concussion, assuming he runs his own social media account on Sunday, tells me that there wasn't a ton of concern. We know things can change in the protocol. He could wake up tomorrow with headaches and suddenly he might be unavailable. I kind of joked tongue in cheek that if Mahomes just laid on the field on Sunday, waited about 10 seconds, grabbed his ankle, that he would have been right out there to finish the game once he came to after essentially going limp on that quarterback read option. But you look at this price, and once Mahomes is officially the starting quarterback, you're going to see the threes disappear from the market. Kansas City will be about a 3.5 to 4 point favorite. So if you like the Chiefs, lay the 3 now, and then you'll have some options much closer to kickoff. We did see some over money come in as well. This total got as low as 53. It's out to 54. Part of that because the weather is clearing up. For me, over a field goal, though, I'm more inclined to side with Buffalo. The concussion is one thing, but that turf toe is a legitimate concern for Mahomes. You watched his mechanics after injuring the toe, and he wasn't quite as elusive in the pocket. He did scramble, but he had nothing but green grass in front of him. Short-armed a couple throws to the outside, and while his arm talent is second to none, we've seen wonky mechanics from quarterbacks when they can't get their hips into it, they can't plant on both their right and left foot. So for me, I'd be a little bit concerned about that and would gravitate towards Buffalo with the points.
Todd Furman, our guy in Vegas, at Todd Furman on Twitter. Obviously, college basketball is different than college football, but I'm curious, when a top 10 team loses by almost 30, how much does that change? I know it's just one game, but how much does that change your power numbers as you continue to kind of evolve through the season?
It's a little bit alarming, but yeah. I think when you look at how poorly Tennessee shot the basketball, you know, you kind of write it off as an anomaly more so than anything else. Now, if the Vols were to come out and continue to struggle from the floor their next 2 to 3 games, okay, then we may have a problem brewing here. And a team a lot of us thought was a legitimate Elite Eight, you know, Final Four type ceiling, maybe not playing their best basketball. But on the same token, you don't all of a sudden elevate Alabama because they couldn't miss from beyond the arc in the first half against LSU to Final Four status by any stretch of the imagination. And that's one of the big challenges, especially when you're talking about 18 to 21-year-old kids. You don't want to undervalue one particular performance, but at the same time, you don't want to overvalue it too much. So when you're looking to build out your power ratings, whether it's college football or college basketball this late in the season, when you have data, so many data points, you're only going to move the number 1.5 to 2. And I don't think it drastically changes Tennessee's season-long outlook, but it's definitely going to bear watching as we see going forward.
What kind of futures we got for Tennessee winning the national championship in football next year?
You tell me how many zeros you want after the 1, and I'm sure we can play Let's Make a Deal. It ain't going to be 10-1. It's not going to be 100-1. Maybe 1,000-1 will be something a little bit more along the lines of considering. I think the better question when you try and figure out the current state of the Vols football program and Vanderbilt, you know, if I made Tennessee a half-game favorite for SEC wins in 2021, which way are you going here with Clark Lee's first season?
Oh, my goodness. I don't know. They may both go winless.
Well, they play each other, so if they both go win this, we got one hell of a story brewing, Brent. I'll tell you that much.
Like 9 overtimes, and they're like, "I forget it. Nobody."
You know, maybe they'll fall back. You know, once we move past this COVID era, they'll still find a way to cancel the game because of COVID. if they're both afraid to lose their regular season finales.
Yeah, we both got numbers. We'll see y'all later. Good stuff, man. It'll be a fun weekend. Thank you very much, Todd.
Always a pleasure, guys. Enjoy the games this weekend.
All right, at Todd Furman on Twitter. All right, transfer portal news for Tennessee. I mean, we need a ticker on this stuff. That's coming up next on 104.5 The Zone. Jason Martin and